Jeff Perlstein of Media Alliance.
Hey, all right. How's everybody doing tonight? All right, me too. It's truly an honor to be here. I actually just got in from San Francisco, where I live now. But I lived in Seattle for about 7.5 years. And it's particularly an honor to be around all these folks who have played such an important role in reclaiming the media and also in the different movements for global justice. So I just want to honor and thank all of you and also honor the space that we're in right now. Almost 3 years exactly to the day was the very first meeting that myself and a bunch of folks, many of them in this room, had about figuring out a way to capture the energy of the many networks of alternative media that existed around the world, but weren't really linked up as powerfully as we thought they could be. And we knew that the World Trade Organization was coming to Seattle in just about 9 weeks, and that we needed to figure out a way to carry on the powerful tradition of media for social change, movement media, that's been going on for a long, long time. And that's part of what I'm charged with speaking about tonight, is the past, and kind of framing where we're going as far as media of resistance, media that's about justice, and media that continues to move us forward and speaks to the highest values that human beings can have. Many people here may be familiar with Chief Seattle's message when the white people finally were colonizing this space in some of the final stages. And he was speaking again to this question of how it can be that people can think that they own the land, how it can be that people can think that they own the air and the sky, how it can be that people think that they own the water that flows all around us. And that's part of why we're here at this specific time today, is because there's people who have come to meet in town, just up the street, who believe that they can own what is the people's, what is part of our public commons, what is part of our public good, and that is the airwaves. That is part of what we own and what we use to communicate with one another. I want to take us back to this notion of why it's so important for us to communicate to one another. Obviously, we know the power of storytelling, but it was really generally recognized a ways back, and it was codified in this one document. It's called the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, right? It was created right after World War II. Countries from all over the world came together to try and figure out how they could together avert any more of these wars, so that people wouldn't be suffering from hunger, that people wouldn't be suffering from oppression of different sorts, and people wouldn't be killing each other. And they came up with this document that codified all these different human rights, that everybody, in order to have a fair and just society, global society, everyone had to have the right to food, everyone had to have the right to shelter, to a safe workplace, to space where they could express their opinions freely. And one of those pieces is the right to communicate freely and across borders. And that's where we talk about media. One of the crucial pieces of that document is that all these rights have to be in place, every single one of them, in order for us to have a fair and just society. You can't tease one out, okay? So for example, you can't have the right to communicate but not have food for your stomach and be dealing with tough situations in the workplace or physical torture if we're going to have a free and just society. So the reason I mention that is to really frame this as, when we talk about media and communications, as a very broad piece of our human and civil rights. And I want to touch on some instances where media making and the movement to reclaim media has played a part in those other struggles for justice and for civil rights. And the one I'm going to start with is a very subjective history. And I want to also urge folks to, we don't really have time, but for people to add their own suggestions about this history. Maybe we can even map it out on the wall during the course of this weekend. It would be a really fun and participatory way to do this, because everyone has their own sense of these different histories, and there's many that may also not be represented in this room. But I want to touch on a few highlights that I'm aware of that have been inspiring to me in my work, and then hopefully we can carry forward. And I'll make it brief as I can. One that I'd like to really mention that's first is papers that were started by African-American folks here and African folks here in the United States, even back into the mid-1800s, around the abolition of slavery, but beyond that, around really claiming their culture and reclaiming their culture. And these papers built up a strong, strong network, the Black Press. There's a great documentary called Black Press, Soldiers Without Swords, that people may want to check out. And there's a vibrant Black press that continues to this day, and one, I'm proud to say one of the strongest papers is one in San Francisco called the SF Bayview, which really covers the community's needs and makes the connections between police brutality at home and US imperialism abroad. So that's one example that goes way back before the 20th century even. And then moving up into the 20th century, of course, we have the rise of community radio. All of these are outside of the commercial sphere, really getting at the heart of what media and communications are about. It's about a back and forth dialogue and discussion where we can connect with one another. And so community radio, of course, took off before there was a thing called the FCC regulating the airwaves. People were just taking to the airwaves themselves and talking to one another and having discussions. Then the FCC was created because the government recognized that there was an opportunity to control this resource and to also have it for commercial use. So we're dealing with some of the repercussions of that today. There's also a vibrant labor press and labor media that was around, especially in the earlier part of the 20th century. And a lot of people credit the labor press for the general strike that took place here in Seattle. So again, this is grounding us right here in our physical space. Was the only general strike that I'm aware of in the continental United States. And a lot of people credit that to the fact that there was a vibrant labor press where people could hear in a daily way about the issues of workers and what they were facing. So then we move on through, I mentioned Pacifica Radio. Oh, did I mention Pacifica Radio?
No.
Oh, okay. So let me do that because I was really heartened to be driving into town, excited to come to this event and turn on the radio and to hear Free Speech Radio News broadcasting live from the Independent Media Center to people all around the world and with a network of reporters that are also global and also this very decentralized participatory model that actually emerged following from the IMC's and the Independent Media Center project. So I want to claim that. Pacifica was founded by pacifists right after World War II because a lot of them had refused to fight in the war. And they were concerned once they got out of some camps that they were put into, some mandatory service and jails that they were put into, that there needed to be spaces for a lot of these discussions, a lot of these stories, and a lot of these perspectives that they weren't seeing space for discussion anywhere else. So they created their own radio network, and they created a model which now has gone much more broadly. This idea of being a listener-supported station was actually pioneered by KPFA-FM in Berkeley, which continues to this day as a community station. And that network continues to grow. Of course, people are familiar with the movement press in the 60s that was about countering the war and getting out stories about the racism that was taking place, U.S. imperialism that was taking place, and the organizing there, and how that mushroomed into this also a precursor of what I would call the IMC movement called Liberation News Service, where there were campus papers and independent papers, independent news bureaus all over the country that were decentralized and non-commercial and created their own wire service for sharing stories that were getting stories out in a daily way. We're fast-forwarding through to the 70s, where cable access was seized as a resource by community members. And one of the key things I'd like to point out just around cable access, a lot of people, I think, give cable access short shrift for saying that it hasn't achieved its potential. But it is one of the few participatory spaces that we still have for media. And it's one of the few spaces around media policy where local communities actually have some say in the media policy. And so we've actually seen some of that in the last year with the merger of AT&T and Comcast. AT&T being the biggest cable company, Comcast being the third biggest cable company. They've now merged to be the super biggest company. But what the opportunity is that in order to lay their wires under your city streets, our city streets, they have to negotiate with each individual city the terms of their agreement. So this is a space for local communities to get involved in media policy that's kind of difficult at the federal level sometimes. It's also a place for people to tell their stories in an unfettered way. And that happened in the 70s and the 80s and 90s through to now. And one great example I like to mention is the Gulf War Crisis TV Project. There was also a media network where people told the stories of dissenting voices that we weren't hearing anywhere else during that time. And they established a network called Deep Dish TV, which distributes programming all over the country in a decentralized way. So these networks were emerging over time and continue to emerge and continue to be built upon. And they're international and global. I'm just talking about some of the ones in the States. I think lastly, I'll just wrap up by talking a little bit too about one piece we're seeing around media and media democracy. When people use the words media democracy, they're talking about a lot of different things. They're talking about how to change the media and to make it more participatory, more democratic, and supporting all these movements for justice. But there's lots of different ways to do that. One is around making our own media, creating media that is our vision, that is telling the stories that we want to see, that is outside of the corporate realm. But there's also challenging the corporate media, holding them accountable, whether that's by demonstrations, letter writing campaigns, blocking their doors, refusing to buy their papers, boycotting them, et cetera, et cetera. And then there's media policy work to make sure that we're holding the big corporations at bay and also reclaiming that space through policy work. And the piece that I'd like to mention around that, around the policy, is also related to the timing of why we're here today and why today is significant. I started by saying it's significant because the National Association of Broadcasters is in town. This is a group of advertisers and commercial interests who are interested in using our resources, the public airwaves that we all own, as a space for advertising and to sell things. Also today is significant because finally, the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, announced that they're going to officially review and look at the last remaining protections on media ownership that exist. These protections have been eroded over time, where it used to be that there were all these protections so that media would be in the public interest, and that was the standard. It's been eroded, especially in the 80s and 90s, during the Reagan and earlier Bush administrations, to the point where now there's all this mega mergers, all these companies buy up lots of properties, and that's how they think of them as properties. But there's a few shreds of protection that are left, and the FCC has now announced today, formally, that they're going to look at removing those. Basically, the very last nail in the coffin around media ownership, media consolidation, and media diversity. So this is a policy piece that we all need to be aware of, and significantly, I'll just close by saying a little metaphor that I'm going to use. They're calling it an omnibus ownership ruling. And the reason they call it omnibus is because there's lots of different ownership rulings that are lumped in. One is around radio ownership. One is around TV and newspaper cross-ownership. One is around broadcast cross-ownership and cable ownership. So this is old and new media are all going to be dealt with in this one decision. But what we have to recognize is this is the very wrong kind of bus. Okay, this omnibus is wrong for all of us. It's wrong for democracy, and it's wrong for our any notions of justice. The kind of bus that we need to get on to take us forward, and folks here are going to talk about taking us forward, is a bus that's grounded in this concept of media as part and parcel of the movements for civil rights and human rights. So we need to harken back to traditions, a bus that was like the bus that Rosa Parks sat down on, right, to make sure that there was racial equality here. We need to talk about the bus that the Freedom Riders took. There was a multiracial coalition of black and white young folks who went and put their bodies in harm's way because the government was not acting to change the injustice in this country. And there's injustice around media, there's injustice around hunger, there's injustice around race, class, we all know about those. So we need to get on the bus going forward in a different direction and sink this omnibus and take ourselves through all these strands that are represented here and represented outside of these rooms forward to a media that's truly ours, that's truly about justice, and it's truly about reclaiming public space. So thank you very much. I'm glad you're here. It's going to be an important weekend for us to all have conversations. And so I want to bring up the next speaker, who has been very inspiring to me and the work that she's done around media and fostering these very powerful and important conversations. So please welcome Tim Ori up to the mic.